You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Everyone, welcome to College Football Live on a Friday afternoon. I will admit I didn't realize it was casual Friday until I saw my man Tom Luganville show up looking like Arthur Fonzarelli. Looked fantastic today, Lugs. Mark Sanchez also joins us. Let's start, gentlemen, with the news of the day. Several parents of Big Ten players are outraged and frustrated that they don't feel like they've had proper transparency from Kevin Warren and the Big Ten League office regarding postponing the 2020 football season. And they showed up today outside of Chicago at the Big Ten headquarters to try to get answers and make their voices heard. That was led by Randy Wade, whose son Sean is a standout defensive back for the Ohio State Buckeyes. Our Michelle Steele is on hand today at the Big Ten headquarters. Michelle, thank you for joining us. What did you learn today outside the Big Ten headquarters from the parents?
Well, I can tell you, Marty, that these parents, they numbered about 30 or so, were looking for answers, not too many questions. You know, the offices right behind me are largely closed because of the virus. But the questions that we heard, I thought, were revelatory nonetheless. The biggest question was why? Why so little information when the conference made the decision initially to postpone fall sports into next year? And why, these families told me, these families who sacrificed so much to put their sons through football, why weren't they involved in the decision and why weren't they better informed?
We do respect the fact that it's a pandemic out here, but the situation with the Big Ten, the lack of transparency is a problem for parents. So the reason we are here is because we want to have conversation. That's simple. We want to have conversation. We want to play in the fall, but regardless of playing in the fall, we want to have conversation before the spring, before next fall.
You know, what is going to change, first of all? If we can't play beginning in October, and you're playing outside, what's going to change when we're playing inside?
That was Julie Wagner. She's a parent of an Iowa football player, expressing a widely held view here, Marty, among the parents that gathered to protest. There's skepticism. They don't feel like the virus is going to improve significantly in the next few months. They feel the safest place for their sons to be is in the football facility. You know, I asked Randy Wade, look, do you feel like today's protest was a success, even if you don't hear from Kevin Warren? And he said, listen, I fought for my son. And that's about all you can do. Marty, back over to you.
Thank you so much, Michelle. And I've actually had conversations with Randy Wade myself, as well as Dr. Chris Hutchinson, whose son Aiden plays for Michigan. And it's this resounding chorus. We've seen the letters to Kevin Warren from the various parental groups. We've heard the frustration from the players. So, Tom, I ask you very simply, what can these parents accomplish? What do they hope to achieve by being there today?
They hope that this will lead to answers as to why the decision was made by the Big Ten. They want details. And you know what? They're owed details. Whether they're parents, whether they are players, whether you are an athletic director or a president of a member institution in the Big Ten, you want details as to why this decision was made. Listen, if I'm them, here's what I'm asking them. At the time this decision was made, 66 million tests have been conducted in the United States. 5.8 million came back as positive. That's 9%. So if I'm a parent here, I want to know from the league, of that 9%, how many fall within the age groups of 17 to 23 and what that percentage is. And of that percentage, how many of that age group required hospitalization to recover? I think they're owed that type of information so they can feel at least at ease with why the decision was made.
I love what you said, Tom, and I'm going to piggyback that, but go slightly dovetail in a different direction. And I'm telling you exactly why, and I said it on Get Up this morning. It's a money issue. I'm not minimizing the effect of COVID or myocarditis, however you pronounce it. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. This is a very serious virus, and there are medical complications associated with it, and these kids are potentially at risk. But college football, the way I've experienced it, the way we've watched it and analyzed it, is over. This is now, these are new types of players who have more information. They realize the leverage they have. This is now going to become a money issue, a compensation issue. It is bigger in some ways than just the virus. And like I said, I'm not minimizing the effect of the virus. I'm just saying the Big Ten and the Pac-12 needed time to regroup and figure out how they're going to come back and rebut some of these demands by these players and now parents about how these parents are, or how these players are going to be protected and, more importantly, compensated.
And Mark, you were a star in the Pac-12 at USC. You grew up out west. You're out there right now. You talked about being Get Up, man. You were on TV at like 6 a.m. out there. So where is the outrage from the Pac-12 parents? Where is the outrage from the Pac-12 coaching staffs? It's a substantial difference between what we're seeing from the Big Ten reaction and the Pac-12 reaction. Why no outrage out west?
Well, here's the difference is, in the Pac-12, there's four schools in California that can't even play, can't even practice because of state legislature. So if a third of your conference is eliminated before you even start, they at least have more of a valid excuse, in my opinion. But the Big Ten, they're going to watch Cincinnati go play a football game here pretty soon, but Ohio State can't play and they're only, you know, a few miles away. That doesn't make sense. That's not a virus issue. I'm telling you, it's a compensation issue, and this thing's going to rear its head like nobody wants to see it. And now you're going to have to figure out how to get all these parents and players and the NCAA or the heads of these conferences to march in the same direction, have the same goal, and figure out some sort of compensation.
You know, Mark, in reference to the four schools that are unable to take the field in the Pac-12 out of the state of California, certainly that has a huge impact. But I also think the other side of this, and having grown up in Southern California, you grew up in Southern California, there's a difference in the year-round passion for collegiate athletics on a year-round basis on behalf of fan bases. That's not necessarily the case in the Midwest or the Southeast in the sense that when football season's there out west, man, people are fired up. They're ready to go. When football season's done, all right, they're on to other things. There are so many things to do in your day-to-day social life in the state of California and then the states surrounding California that I just don't know if the passion is there on a year-round basis for people to start raising hell about this and why the Pac-12 isn't playing.
They're definitely raising hell in the Big Ten, Lugs. And one of the items that so many people have wondered about and needed an answer about was how eligibility will shake out. Well, the NCAA today addressed that. Here's what they said. They formally approved an additional year of eligibility and an additional year in which to complete it through a blanket waiver. That's not all the news around college football today. The SEC also announced that it's extending and advancing its COVID-19 protocol to include a third COVID-19 test before games, enhanced screening for myocarditis and other heart ailments associated with the coronavirus. They'll coordinate centralized testing for all 14 schools through a third-party provider, and they've recommended that the league's cardiac evaluation mandate include a troponin-level blood test, electrocardiogram, echocardiogram, and a medical evaluation by a physician. That's a whole lot of words, Lugs. A whole lot of words. What do you think it means?
I like every one of them. What it means is that the SEC ain't playing games about playing games. They, at every single turn, the leadership of the Southeastern Conference, every time there's been a naysayer, every time there's been somebody say, well, what about this? Well, what about that? Guess what the SEC does? They come up with an answer to it. Sooner or later, you're going to have to concede that they're on top of this. They are creating the most safe possible environment that anybody in our country could hope to be in, with every single question that somebody has about this, they have come up with a reply and a solution to it. And I think they should be commended because their players and their coaches are relying upon their conference to take the medical data that they have and make those decisions. And so when a question comes about, okay, do we have an answer for that? Yes, we do, or no, we don't, and then you move forward.
You're 100% right again, Luke's. And I'll liken the SEC to the NFL. There was no, like, if and maybe, but
right.
It was, hey, we're going to play. Think about the NFL. They own an entire day of the week along with your local church, right? So they know, hey, man, we're playing. When football season starts, we're playing. The SEC followed that same model, and it was figure out a way for us to play. Get us to the safest possible solutions to get these kids on the field, and that's what they've done. So now it's just making things as safe as they possibly can be. And I think Coach Saban is right in a lot of his ideology with this. These kids are safer there in a controlled environment rather than going home and who knows what's going to happen.
The SEC also did this, gentlemen. Greg Sankey told me a month ago on Marty and McGee, we are going to take as much time as it takes in order to make sure we're making the right decision. And they came out that September 26th was when their season was going to kick off, just about as far as you can push it and have a full season. Coming up, we're actually going to talk some ball, y'all. We're going to tell you what teams to watch in the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC. I'm excited to talk a little football for the first time this year. And much like a whole lot of us, Virginia head coach Bronco Mendenhall said today, he's a little bit conflicted.
College Football Live is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle auto, home, or motorcycle insurance. Visit progressive.com. And Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Sunday at 8 Eastern, we'll kick off our fifth annual Fantasy Football Marathon with more than 24 straight hours of coverage on ESPN, ESPN2, and the ESPN app. All the fantasy insight to get you ready for your season. If 24 hours ain't enough, you're pretty helpless. With the Big Ten and the Pac-12 out of the picture, it's the Power Three this season. According to ESPN's Football Power Index, Oklahoma, the favorite to win the Big 12 for the sixth consecutive season. In the ACC, no surprise, Clemson is your favorite, according to the FBI. Tigers are doing all right. They've only lost two games in the ACC since 2015. And in the Southeastern Conference, it's Roll Tide again. The FBI says Alabama's the favorite to get back to the top of the conference mountain after LSU knocked them off last season. So let's discuss this, gentlemen. It's your turn to offer your perspective. Let's start with the Southeastern Conference. Lugs, who's your team to beat?
Well, I think I'm going off the map here with Kentucky. I think the job Mark Stoops has done in his tenure has been nothing short of sensational. Everybody thought they would dip below 500 after the 10-win season 2 years ago. What do? They win eight games with a wide receiver at quarterback. That tells me they've established depth. They're going to get Terry Wilson back at quarterback. They get the waiver for Joey Gatewood at quarterback as well. And defensively, they're a good-looking football team.
I'm looking at Auburn, and I want to see Bo Nix's development this offseason, whatever offseason you want to call it. He's got to get better in situational awareness. That's red zone. That's third down. I want to see his completion percentage skyrocket. And now he has the help of Chad Morris, who was Deshaun Watson's former quarterback coach. I think that's really going to help him.
Let me clarify. Teams to watch, not teams to beat. I didn't want to hang Lugs out there. All right, let's head to the ACC.
Hey, that's okay. The internet will take care of that. The internet will take care of it.
I know. I can see Lugs' head just going, money, boom. All right, let's head to the ACC, Lugs. Who's your team to watch in the ACC?
Without question, it's Pitt. I think Pat Narduzzi has ingredients that you build a championship-caliber team with, and that's up front on both sides of the ball, an established quarterback in Kenny Pickett. Let's not forget that a year ago, with two season-ending losses along the defensive front, they were a top-five disruptive defense in negative plays and quarterback sacks a year ago. I think Pitt's got a chance to be really good.
Right there, we just saw Jeff Hafley, the former defensive coordinator from Ohio State. I want to see him make a carbon copy of the Ohio State infrastructure at Boston College, whether it's operation, strength and conditioning, or in recruiting. I think all those things will improve. Remember, Coach Addazio had this team at a healthy 7-8 win season year in and year out. They're right there. It's right for the picking, and they got this five-star transfer quarterback from Notre Dame, Jurkovic. I think he's going to make a huge impact right away.
Big 12, who are you looking at, Lukes?
Oklahoma State. I think that they've got a difference maker in the backfield in Hubbard. They've got Tylan Wallace on the outside as a guy that can stretch the field. Quarterback Spencer Sanders was starting to come into his own before he had a thumb injury. And then on defense, they came into the season not very good. End of the season, much improved. They're a team to look out for.
I'm looking at Texas and that guy pumping his fist right there, Tom Herman. That seat's getting hot, baby. You know those Texas fans. They want the Longhorns to win. I think he's got to prove something this year. We all know Sam Ehlinger. We're all going to be looking at him. But I'm looking at that outside linebacker, Joseph Asai. This guy had 5 sacks in that game against Utah in their bowl game. He's got a nose for the football. He's got to be their leader on defense and help get the ball back to Sam Ehlinger to score points and win.
Mark, you've mentioned a couple big-time players in your team analysis. Let's switch over to the player analysis starting in the SEC. Who's your SEC player to watch?
Listen, I was texting with this kid today. He's now at Mississippi State. He's a grad transfer, KJ Costello. He comes from Orange County, California, went to Santa Margarita High School, one of my good friends, great golfer. I love this kid. I want him to do well. He's played 25 games at Stanford in 5 of the – he's thrown the ball 40 times. Coach Leach averages 55 attempts. Go ahead, Luke.
Hey, listen, I'm going with Jamie Newman. If you haven't seen this guy, you've missed out on a real treat the last couple of years in major college football. If the Georgia offensive approach decides to really bend to his skill set, both as a passer and as a runner, this will be a dynamic offense because of Jamie Newman's talent.
Mark, I'm not sure that handicap's going to help Costello with those Bama defensive linemen, but I guess we shall see. Let's head over to the ACC. Who's your player to watch in the ACC, Mark?
Talking with Coach Mack Brown, he's really challenged his quarterback, second-year starter Sam Howell. He wants him to be more of a vocal leader. He wants him to check the ball down when things aren't open downfield, and it's Coach Mack Brown probably tells him, hey, listen, don't make me chicken salad out of chicken poop, and don't forget to use your legs. Use your legs and steal us a first down, son.
Well, speaking of using your legs, I think the marriage between Miami and Rhett Lashley, their new offensive coordinator, is going to be perfect for Derek King, the Houston transfer. He can do it all. He is so difficult to handle, both as a runner and when outside of the pocket. He's going to create an awful lot of problems for opposing defenses.
We're all sitting here trying to stay composed after the chicken poop comment. Big 12, Sanchez, who are you looking at?
Oh, Chuba Hubbard, man, this kid, the Canadian Express by way of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. I want him to see the rushing, be the rushing champ 2 years in a row. They got a new offensive coordinator, and I'm not telling him what to do, but when in doubt, turn around and hand it to this kid, flick it to this kid, pitch it to him, throw it to him down the field, whatever you got to do, get the ball to 30.
Guys, I think I'm like everybody else. I want to see if Lincoln Riley can do this 4 quarterbacks in a row, whether it's Baker Mayfield, whether it's Kyler Murray, whether it's Jalen Hurts. Is Spencer Rattler going to be that guy? Is he going to beat out Tanner Mordecai and be the player that everybody feels will just take the keys and drive the race car? Because you talk about massive shoes to fill over the last 3 years. Spencer Rattler's got his hands full.
All right, I want y'all to remember one name in the SEC. A'Rick Gilbert, tight end at LSU, true freshman. He's the first tight end to ever be the Gatorade National Player of the Year.
Yeah, he's only 26 years old.
By the end of the year.
That's, he literally looks like a full-grown man.
Miles spinning by the end of this one, Luge. Look out! All right, coming up on College Football Live, we'll hear from Virginia head coach Bronco Mendenhall, who, like a lot of us, is conflicted about the upcoming season. Tomorrow, it's another UFC fight night from Las Vegas, Nevada. Pedro Munhoz takes on former lightweight champ Frankie Edgar in the bantamweight main event. The main card starts 8:30 Eastern on ESPN. Prelims at 5:30 Eastern. Go to ESPNplus.com or download the ESPN app.
College Football Live is brought to you by Jeep. There's only one.
Notre Dame and North Carolina have temporarily suspended practice due to spikes in positive COVID-19 tests on campus. Five Notre Dame players have tested positive, and six subsequent players are in quarantine due to contact tracing. Right now, North Carolina is in full virtual classes, so they too have suspended practice. One other ACC head coach, Bronco Mendenhall from Virginia, is conflicted right now about his players coming back to campus and practicing. Here's what Bronco had to say today.
I love the idea of student-athlete in that order. And it's very difficult for me to reconcile having football players on grounds and no other students on grounds from a philosophical perspective. Now if I say and I look at my team and see how much they want to play and they want me to coach them and they want me to keep them safe and I want to keep them safe, it's really tricky, right? Because philosophically and morally I have a strong thought. And then I have these relationships with my team, and they want to play. They want me to coach them, and they want to be safe at the same time, and I think I can help them do that. And so, yeah, I'm conflicted, and that's the best way I could put it.
Philosophically and morally conflicted. Bronco got deep on us. Luges, what do you make of his comments?
That these are unprecedented times, which means that unprecedented decisions are going to have to be made, and they're probably not going to be popular. Whether they benefit the student athlete, whether they benefit the student body, not everybody's going to be able to be treated the same, but you've got to do the best job you can to put forth a product on the field, because this isn't just about athletics, Mark. This is also about salvaging financial ruin.
Oh, no doubt. They're trying to make as much money as they can and disperse that money among the conferences that are willing to play. The issue is, nobody can say there's a 0% chance that somebody, you know, doesn't die from this thing. Nobody wants to wear that responsibility, and that's right. Where he's at. He's conflicted.